Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Happy to have you with us. But first, I want to tell you about one of the sponsors we have here on the show. The NFL draft is one of the most anticipated days of any football fan's calendar, and that also means fantasy football season is not too far behind. DynastySportsEmpire.com is going to change the way you play fantasy football. DSE offers fantasy football gamers of all skill levels an opportunity to draft and retain your well-maintained rosters and players for their entire NFL career. Highlighted with large rosters, high-scoring games, easy payouts, and an amazing online community, DSE has everything you would want in a challenging online experience. Please visit them online today at DynastySportsEmpire.com. That's DynastySportsEmpire.com. And check out all the amazing upcoming formats for this upcoming fantasy football season. Go check them out. We got a great episode for you today, so let's get to it.
Hello, this is Jonathan Antoine, and you are listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody. How are you, Michael? How's it going?
It's sweltering up here in Georgia, Scotty.
Sweltering, eh? What are we dealing with here?
We're talking high 80s, low 90s, 80% humidity. It's not fun exercising in that stuff. That's, I gotta be honest.
That's what we had. That's what we had early in the week. It's pretty much 90s, just gross, dripping sweat all everywhere. It was great. It's great.
I saw the video where you were dripping, but that wasn't sweat, my friend.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. Just throwing a bold statement out there, Mike. Babies are exhausting.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
Is that why it's so depressing in orphanages? Like, they're like, man, I can't fall asleep with all these kids.
That might be a factor. But yeah, we're definitely like at the stage where he's now starting to move a little bit and he's grabbing everything in sight and pulling everything and, you know, holding on to everything, including my face, my beard, smacking me around. Like, gone are the days where like I could put on something on TV and just kind of put him like on his little pillow thingy next to me and just be like, yeah, this ain't too bad. I'm just watching the... You know, just watching the Mets. Like, I tried to watch Loki today, like, five separate times, because it just, I'd be like, oh, he's cool. No, he's crying, he's fed, this, that. So, and right now we're recording at one of our later times that we are recording, and strange on a Sunday night, but yeah, it's just one of those days. So you could hear the excitement in my voice today.
Have you thought about telling him stop?
Imagine it was that easy.
That might be a good way to start the conversation with him.
Imagine it was that easy. I'm just like, let me try this tomorrow. Stop. And he's like,
oh.
All right.
I didn't know that was bothering you, Father. All right. On to my New York Times. My apologies.
Like, it's great, obviously. There's no complaints there. But it's just, there's certain days where you're just like, oh, my God. Like, I am exhausted, you know, like it's just, and then like you and the wife start, you're both in the same situation. So you're both kind of like, like nagging at each other and the easiest when both people are kind of tired and exhausted. So it's just like, I'm sure every parent out there kind of gets that, but I don't know. Anyway, we're here. We're happy. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans here. That's Mike. I am Scott. We are plowing, I say, our way to 400 episodes, Mike. We're closer to 400 now than we are 300.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Mike is prepared today. He's ready to rock.
let me look that up. You said something factual. Good for you, Scotty. all right, pass.
Yeah, I don't know. So welcome to the show, guys. Mike referred to, I did comedy the other day, one of my first live spots that like wasn't one of my shows, and it was at the Oak Barrel, which is we've done a couple podcasts from there. And they set up this outdoor area, and I didn't even know where it was. It was kind of in the back of the restaurant, and we get there. I get there, and I'm like, oh, cool, nice crowd, probably like, I don't know, 40, 45, which is great for that. It's a small little place. That's a packed house.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm excited to just be able to do my set and not have to set up lights or sound or just to go up and just do my shit. And I got there really humid, and I'm like, oh, boy, I don't know. It might rain later, you know. And then they're like, I go to the producer, and he's like, oh, you're up first. I'm like, yes. It's not going to rain. Like, I might miss the rain. So Rich McDonald goes up. He's hosting. It's like drizzling a tiny bit. As soon as I step out into the there was a one tent. There was two tents. One tent with the comics, and then the other tent where all the people were sitting. As soon as I stepped out, boosh, just water flowing. People, like, having to, like, stand close under the tent because they were getting soaked if they were near the edges. And it's so loud that I can't even hear. I can't hear the audience, and I can't hear myself. So I'm just, like, going with it. I'm like, can you guys even hear me? And they're like, eh. You know, I'm like, I don't know. So this is, like, a combination of humidity sweat, water splashing me all over the – and then flop sweat at the same time. Like, it was all the different types of liquid going on in one set. And – sure enough, I do my set. It was fine for what it was. Nothing. No, we're not talking A plus. We're not talking F. Somewhere in the middle. And as soon as I finish up, I get off. The rain just dies, and every other comic gets like a perfect, nice, attentive crowd that's not getting soaked.
You think God is trying to tell you something there, Scotty? Out of curiosity.
Quit.
Yeah. He's like, I've heard your stuff. Let me help you out there, my friend.
He's like, really? That joke? Again? You had a year and a half off, and you're still telling that one?
Really, it doesn't get better if you put the F-bomb in there, Scotty. It's the same bad joke. That's all God is trying to tell you.
Yeah, man. And let me tell you, it is still not there yet. Maybe for the guys who are able to get up like all the time, like every night in the city or something like that. But it is still the timing and the beats and the remembering the order of things is definitely not there yet. But I guess it'll come eventually, maybe. If not, you know, oh well.
Well, as we established on prior episodes, you are the man of outdoor comedy. And that's where your whole life has to be and all. Like, I can't fathom a scenario where you're telling jokes and somebody's like, it's thunderstorming and we're dry. This doesn't feel right.
I have
not with Scotty Brennan.
I have kind of become the outdoor comedy guy, I guess. I've done lake shows with boats going on where people are sitting in their house and like little kids around. Now I've done rain. Maybe now, if like, you know, maybe we're inside in Tap House a couple weeks, I'm like, you know, this doesn't feel right. You guys want to move to the parking lot and then move everybody out of the restaurant, move them into the parking lot, and then I'll just feel comfortable.
All right. I got a brand new idea just for you. You, instead of teaming up with Tap House 15, great bar and restaurant, I recommend everybody go to it.
Right.
Instead of doing that, you team up with Jehovah's Witnesses.
Okay.
And you go door-to-door comedy.
So, like, just knock, knock, hey, I'm Scott. Or just, like, knock, knock, hey, anybody married in there? Celebrating anything? And just, like, go right into my set.
Absolutely. This further cements you as the outdoor comedian.
Knock,
like,
knock,
immediately,
comedy.
Like, people are going to get on their Facebook and on their phones. They're like, is this some guy coming to your house and all telling, like, jokes about his wife and stuff? Yeah, that's Scotty Brennan, the king of outdoor comedy.
Knock, knock comedy. It's got a good ring to it. It's got a good ring to it. A little bit of knock, knock comedy. Again, this is one of those ideas, Mike, that I feel like is going to get me arrested.
Well, here's what you do. You set it up like a regular show.
Okay.
So if you're worried you're about to go to a house and somebody has a gun, you have an opener. You don't put yourself out there.
Okay. So I throw
That's
someone
when you
else.
Go, Yeah, that's when you go, hey, Doug Max, you know how you've been wanting to be on one of my shows?
Right.
You go right ahead. You're the opener. Right ahead.
Hi. I like it. So have like a sacrificial lamb first. And then if it's going really bad, I just kind of like fade away in the background and just leave them on the doorstep.
Yeah. Yeah. And you get like a big, like nice, swanky minivan. Like the closer will be in the back. That'll be their green room. And,
okay.
And you'll get the vibe at every house you go to. And you just tell them, no, now it's your 30. And they'll be so appreciative because they're coming into a hot crowd. You're not bringing them out when Doug Max is screaming, dog is loose, dog is loose.
What about if I take that concept, but I maximize on the amount of audience I'm going to, what if I do a toll booth comedy show? And every 30 seconds, I'm just trying that joke out for like hundreds of people. And then if they, well, I guess there's no baskets anymore. But if they really like it, they can like throw more coins into the basket.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's working for you because you're in New Jersey where there's no bigger state when it comes to tolls. We got to figure out a way to make sure Easy Pass doesn't exist.
Yeah, right.
Like that will destroy comedy, Scott. What
if you got a laugh pass? Like you order, like if you were interested, you can go in the laugh lane, and you're like, oh, I wonder who's in the laugh lane today. It's like a revolving club, like you know, like different comics are coming. But it's literally like one liners because otherwise people would really not be happy.
Honey, I know we were doing about 50 miles an hour, but was that Jim Brewer?
Mm-hmm.
Was he in the middle of the interstate?
I mean, if you're a one-liner comic, this is the best thing ever for you. If you're like a Rodney Dangerfield type, you know, you could test that joke 500 times in 1 hour.
Yeah, you can't do like crowd work in that kind of situation. You can't get those comedians there. You can't do any of those jokes that's like, how fat was she? Because you wouldn't hear them as they're blazing away from you.
You can't be a storyteller. You can't be here's a 10-minute story with a big payoff. So, yeah, you got to be like real tight one-liners. And that might work, you know, like ha, 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 we'll pay the toll. Here's an extra 50 cents.
So you do this comedy show at the Tunnel.
Okay.
Because you can do it Friday nights, you get a New York crowd, and you know they can't get away. There's no opportunities to go, this sucks, I'm turning around. You've seen the Tunnel traffic.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
Yeah, so like every time there's a standstill, we just like run out with like a makeshift stage and like plop it behind like a background. Be like, hey, everybody, how we doing? Honk if you hate the Tunnel. Yeah.
You know? There'll be some drivers like, oh, please, God, I'll give you $5. Just clean the windshield. Don't tell me that joke again. No.
I actually had a dream the other night that I filmed a comedy special in my garage, and I had my driveway full of seats. Like people would sit in the driveway, and like the garage door opened up, and it was just like, but it was like full production. I had like 4-camera shoot, like, and I just, but the garage was not changed at all. It wasn't neatened up. There was still like, you know, the gas can and the pieces of 2x4, like just a garage. And it was actually like, I actually woke up, you know, like when you wake up sometimes you're like, yeah, that's a good idea. Like it's almost seemed so real in your head that you're like, yeah, that would go real well. I even like text my wife in the work. I'm like, I had this dream. I had a comedy special and her immediate text was like, we're not doing comedy at the house. I'm like, okay, well, I'm like, yeah, that probably isn't a great idea.
First off, you have a garage in a new place. I haven't been to your new place. You have a garage?
Yes, it has a garage.
Oh, okay. Yep, okay. Yep. I mean, you did explain to your wife that's why you got the bigger house, right? It had nothing to do with Shay. I mean, it's like, babe, Shay's going to be on the other side. He'll never hear the garage door opening in the crowd.
Babe, you know I bought this house for garage door comedy series. That's what I've been planning my whole life, and you're a dream killer. You're a dream killer is what I'm saying.
The first place was by the lake for the lake show.
Mm-hmm.
That made perfect sense. Now it's a garage show. Let me guess, you're going to get mad when we get that gazebo in a few years, huh? Huh? You're going to ruin my dreams, huh? Can't gazebo show, huh?
Yeah, after like the pandemic, there's pretty much no limit on where comedy shows can be held at this point. I mean, I saw people like literally just doing comedy shows in the middle of like Central Park. Like they just mic. They just started like doing comedy, which I have no interest in. But I guess like more power to the people that want to like at least be telling jokes during that time. But I feel like in the last 3-4 weeks though, like comedy is like back. Like I see people's schedules filling up. I see pictures every night on social media of guys like performing and. It's good to see. It definitely is good to see. I hope there's a little, another like little comedy boom here as people are just dying to get out of the house.
Yeah, I hope it kind of comes. I hope it comes back, but I hope people are intelligent enough to not flood it, because the second it's flooded, you know, it will instantly go down to what it was and maybe even further down. Yep. Those people are like, no, no, every Thursday at the bar, comedy night. Every Thursday, yeah. They will absolutely. Nobody has ever hated a Thursday night bar comedy show. I guarantee it.
I'm trying to think of the. I remember I did a show in the middle of a pizza place at a music show. I like con. This is when I was first starting, and I was like, "Oh, do you guys have comedians?" It was kind of like an open mic sitch, and they're like, "Yeah, whatever, come on down." And I go there and it's all musicians, like all dudes playing like Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young songs. And like I go up there, I'm like, hey guys, you know, how are you? That was, meanwhile, pizza's being served. That was probably one of the most awkward places. The Vapor Room, that was another Vapor pretty room. Awkward scenario. There's some strange places I've done.
Where was that library we did an open mic at?
Oh, library in Chatham, I think it was Chatham.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
That's when we there was like that guy doing like the hip. I forget what it. Oh my god! We got to go back. Like, that,
we got to go I back. I know like what you're talking about. 300.
I'm gonna explode. Wasn't it something like that? Yeah. I'm gonna explode. but yeah, more power to him. Yeah, I've done some weird stuff along the way. And I think now like. I don't know. I guess it's kind of just like, I'm open to whatever, but I kind of want to go back to like being more selective on, I have to be now because I have the kid. I can't be out. I mean, so I have to be a little bit more selective. Like this gig makes sense. Like there's okay money and like, it's going to be a crowd and worth a drive and stuff. No longer can just hop out of the house and just do it for nothing. So.
Yeah. Like speaking of bar shows, I kind of remember like the tail end when I was still doing it. I remember I went to, I actually went out there. Speaking of Doug Max, we went there. It was on Route 130. I forget which bar it was. I think it was down in East Windsor.
Was it the station? The station? Was it Mike Bonner's room?
No, it was further.
That's still my biggest bomb in history. Is that Mike? I can picture exactly. And it wasn't my jokes weren't hitting. There was two old drunk ladies in the audience that would not let me speak. Like, literally, they're just like, "Ha, you're tall. You look like my nephew." Like, the whole time, and I couldn't get the word. And I had no skills at that time to, like, deal with hecklers. So it was just, I just ate it for whatever it was, 10, 15 minutes straight. And I probably did that place 4 or 5 times. I had like one good set out of the 5. Like, I think they're stuck in my head there. Like, I go there, I'm like, eh.
Yeah, that's one. He has one of those shows where it's like, I know he advertises, but it still always feels like when you go in there, people are still like, what? What? I came here to eat. What?
Yeah, there's a lot of dinner going on. Anytime there's a lot of dinner, it's like, oh boy. You know.
But as I was saying, so I went there with like Doug. Because he was performing, and Tom Mangelli was there too. He was just there to support the event. And I remember it was in October. It was right by my birthday, and I forget who was running the show, but he pretty much said, "A comedian's not showing up, but you two decide who wants to take the spot for tonight."
Okay.
And Mangelli said, you know, it's your birthday, so it's your call. And like I said, this was like the tail end was I was kind of losing interest on it. So I was just thinking. I'm just like, you know what? It's yours. And he kind of gave me a look like, what? Like, it was like the, I was doing this because every comedian says yes to every situation.
Yeah.
Kind of looks. So this is when the guy didn't organize the thing correctly, because it's kind of, again, like a situation where people went to that place not really expecting a show. Add to it, this is World Series night.
Yes.
So everybody is clamoring to watch the World Series as people in the middle of the bar are grabbing mics and trying to do bits and whatever.
That's and rough.
Yep. It was like just eat it kind of night. And I lucked out because when he gave me the spot the next month, that's when he actually took a back room.
Yep.
And it felt great. This is great.
I think I know the exact room you're talking about, because I think I did that room also during some kind of major sporting event, and this guy was literally like walking up to people who like are just trying to have a beer after work and like, hey, how are you guys? Like interviewing them at the bar. There's nothing worse. Let me tell you, people, this is a PSA for anybody listening. If you're interested in comedy and you want to run a comedy show, or you think your bar or your restaurant might have it, there's nothing worse than unsuspecting comedy. Like when people are like, oh, I'm here to have dinner and food, and you're like, we're going to do a comedy show, which is an art form that literally needs people listening and attentive and no distractions. And people who want to laugh. People don't want to laugh when they're just like having a couple beers with their buddy and then they're being told to be quiet. There's nothing worse than that. I've had a few of those and it's so bad. I will say, I heard, like, I forget who was interviewed, some comedian, like it's okay to not take every gig. Like early on, I take every, like, it's okay to kind of take time off and kind of live life a little bit so you have stuff to talk about. Like somewhere along the line, they've ingrained it into some of these comics said, you got to do every spot. You got to do 40 spots a day. Like, does that help you? 100% it helps you and makes you sharp. But you got to live life a little bit too and have some stuff to write about and enjoy it. Like to me, like, the idea of going to do like 5 spots a night or something like that at every little, that doesn't sound enjoyable to me.
No, and I really don't. It's like you say, you hear it all the time. That's what you're supposed to do. You hear from like all the big comedians. They're constantly just going to place every night and just trying stuff out. And I understand that. But like, if you're not like full hearted into it, it is, one, it's painful to do. And two, it comes out in your how you do your performance. There's no way to fake if you're not into it how you're going to feel on stage.
Yeah, it's amazing for like stage comfortability, but I don't know if it's always the best for like your life and like not burning out. Like, I don't think there's one way to do it anymore, because no comic anymore is just a comic. There's something else. They have a podcast. They have a show. They're making content. Like, very rare anymore is just a guy who just does stand-up. Like, there's so many more avenues to put out content or work on things, or like, you know, every comic's got a podcast, and I think that's a great thing, because it's like, I've had bits that have come from here. I'm able to, you know, tap into a different creative muscle as far as like I say this all the time. When we started this show, it was like I was trying to be like funny. You know what I mean? Like, we're trying to be, you know, funny. Oh, we're comics. We got to be. But like, that kind of went away really quick as soon as we started doing like interviews with real people. It's like the funny will come naturally if you're funny, you know, but like not every episode needs to be like a knee slapping, like, ha ha ha, like here's the zany morning zoo bits. Like, I'd rather someone turn this show on, those listening, and say, wow, that was a really interesting podcast, or that was a really good interview, than, oh my God, that was so hysterical. You know what I mean? Like, the hysterical is great. But like, I don't really do this show anymore to be like, oh, it's got to be hilarious every single week.
Well, that's good, considering some of our nights.
Yeah.
That works.
Do you think there's? Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say. So, in conclusion, surprise, comedy shows don't work, but door-to-door comedy will work.
You think there is a? I always think about this for like actors and singers and stuff like that. Like, singers, there's open mics, you know, but like, actors, like, it's not like you could just like be like, ah, I'm gonna go down to the, you know, the cafe down the street and work on my my role as officer number three or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, they can't run their lines. I always think that's kind of hard. Like, you got to practice kind of by yourself.
Is George Clooney doing a 10-minute spot here in a bagel shop? What the hell?
Yeah.
I'm working on the ER of the movie, and I don't know if I got it anymore, guys. Sorry.
What about opera singers? Like, I don't know if they can go work out at the local open mic. I've never seen an opera. I've seen every acoustic drummer, guitarist, singer combination you could think of, but, like, I don't know if an opera guy can go down there and be like, okay, here is Pavarotti's, you know, and just blast out a song.
Can you imagine how intimidating that's got to be for the person following that? I mean, but that's like, I don't know how, is somebody just rocks Pavarotti where you're just like, oh my God, that was performance. How can you go up there? Hey, everybody, I've been playing guitar for 3 months now. I make my own music. Let's give it a try.
I once followed an 11-year-old who did comedy, and you know how hard that was to follow him because he murdered, and like all his family was in there, and it was like, he had some like rehearsed comedy thing, but it was like really well, like he did really well for his 5-minute spot, and like I had to go follow that with all these dumb jokes. Like, I spent like 5 minutes referencing his set. You know, like, it, ridiculously hard to follow. But the reason I bring up the opera singer,
why did you do that, Scott?
That is called radio, Mike. That is just radio gold right there. But we're really happy to. So the guest we have on the show is an opera singer. He's a tenor, and he was on Britain's Got Talent. Just a really super nice guy. Just an amazing voice. If you go Google him, and we have Jonathan Antoine on the show, who's really kind of blowing up all over the place as far as his voice. He's also done some really cool covers and things like that. So we're going to call across the pond to England and get Jonathan on the line. Hello. Hi, John. How are you?
Hey, doing very well. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. That is Mike over there. Michael, how are you this fine morning?
Doing well. Shoved a couple waffles in my mouth and rushed down for the interview like a professional.
So the usual, as we say.
Yeah. The great. Absolutely. Cronkite, all of them. That's what they did.
Absolutely.
So yeah, John. So it's actually sunny over there in the UK. That's like that happens like once every blue moon, correct?
Yeah. I think the last time it was sunny, the entire street kind of ran out into the street itself, and we all had a big party. No, it is a very rare occasion, though, for it actually to be a nice day outside.
Yeah, when I was in, I did a semester in London when I was, you know, in college or whatever, and I think out of the whole semester, there was probably like 4 sunny days. So,
yeah.
Everybody's running to their doctor. What is this? And the doctor's like, that's a tan.
Yeah. So, John, again, thank you for giving us the time here. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I guess my first question is, you know, I was thinking about this morning, and we've had a lot of artists on the show over the last year as far as with the pandemic and whatnot, musicians, artists, actors. And one of the questions I've been asking a lot of them is how they have survived the pandemic, how they've been creative. And I thought of you even a little bit more because opera and tenor and the power is really like, I imagine live music is really where people feel like, yeah, recordings are great and all, but live is really where the power is. How have you kind of handled the pandemic and not being able to perform live and whatnot?
Well, yeah, you are absolutely right. And to start off, let me say thank you very much for having me. Your time. But it has been a very, very strange several months. I have been fortunate enough to be able to get into the studio, but it has been basically an impossibility to produce a legitimate live concert with people in the seats. So I'm not even sure myself at the moment what I've been doing to survive over the last year. I've just been sort of subsisting and existing in the periphery of people's minds. I did manage to put on a virtual concert though, which was really cool actually, to kind of bring us into the information age, and yeah, have people who normally perhaps wouldn't be able to get across to the UK, or if I'm in wherever I'm at,
right.
For them to have an opportunity is super, super cool, actually. And I'm grateful that we must, of course, find things to be grateful for and to smile about during all of this. And that's one of the things that I feel is great. Our connections, the fact that we've all been able to, I mean, even right now, we're connecting through technology.
Right.
And that's awesome.
Yep.
So what exactly is involved with that virtual concert? Like, do you just have like music, like orchestra music in the background? You're singing, or like the lack of a better term, the violin people coming in on Zoom and doing it over their speaker?
That's their official title too, Mike. The violin people.
Yeah, the violin people. Yeah. I Googled it.
That would be really interesting because of the like slight latency of Zoom.
Yep.
to try and have an orchestra, and that would be pretty cool. But no, it is we have the tracks from like the albums and stuff. We've got all the raw like audio files there, so we can pump that into whatever venue. Obviously, we can't have a bunch of people on stage, so we replace them with their machine selves, I guess. And yeah, it was it was weird. It was kind of like recording a music video almost.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was all two camera or it's just it really did feel completely different from normal live performances. Yeah. But it was fun.
Are you starting to see light at the end of the tunnel as far as some live stuff starting to open up, or is it still kind of all in question?
Starting. Right. Starting. Yeah. It's as everything sort of starts to open up, everyone is rushing to get back out there, right?
Yep.
Some people have, they've worked out things with certain places, and where me and my management company were in the process of rescheduling dates that were supposed to happen at the beginning of last year. So it's all a little bit up in the air,
right,
in terms of that, but we are getting them bolted down.
Slowly. All right. That's good. Yeah. That's positive. That's a positive.
Yeah.
So let's kind of like dive into your background. I mean, when you were growing up, were you like going to operas? Were you naturally there? Were you just a good singer? And somebody pointed out, hey, you could probably get into opera. How did this journey all begin?
The strange thing is that I think the first time I saw an opera was in 2016.
So, really?
A considerable amount of time after everything. It was, well, when I was young, I just I loved music in all of its forms. I danced around to the hits of the 2000s as a little 5-year-old in in the living room at home. And I suppose instruments are expensive. So I started trying to replicate the things that I heard and I could make. And it all kind of came from mimicry in a way, I guess. Eventually, I did a couple of little productions in primary school, and I had some really encouraging teachers, and people's parents were really supportive of when I had this, tiny little high male voice. I never lost that bug for it. When that recognition, that sort of affirmation that I exist whatsoever came from not just my parents, it was really cool.
Right.
And that feeling, I still get that to this day. So that's why I do it, I guess.
Well, let me ask you. So, like, I don't know if you have neighbors that live close to you or, but when, here's like when you're, Like to practice opera, obviously one of the keys in opera is volume. Like, do you have like a little soundproof area to practice, or do your neighbors basically hate you? Is what I'm saying.
A few years ago, I'm currently in this sort of little studio space that it's a few feet away from the house.
Okay,
we are very lucky to have a fairly long back garden, so we had this place built up, and I tried to make it as soundproof as I could. There's even like a booth at the back, so if I'm doing some really intense stuff or recording, I can always go in there. But I have I mean, I remember it kind of been long after I moved into this house. I didn't think I was being particularly loud, but I was singing through something. I just hear bang, bang, bang on the wall. I instantly know. I've never, since that day, I have not sung in my own room. I go out somewhere else to do it.
I just imagine neighbor, boom. That's beautiful, but I'm trying to sleep. I have a tear in my eye and I want to close my eyes. So, I mean, you got your popularity from Britain Got Talent. Kind of give us like a feel from that experience going into it, because from everything I've saw from the TV, you were like super shy going into it. And I mean, what's kind of like that emotion going up there? Because I just always look at like opera tenor as like a next level of singing, where it's like you could be an average like country singer or pop singer, but you don't really hear about an average opera singer, for lack of a term. You know what I mean?
Well, thank you. I'm glad I got into it. That going on the show is it is wild. Like that being like your first glimpse into how a television program is made is pretty bizarre, I will say. Things you kind of realize things, and now when I look at TV shows, I feel like I can always tell when something was recorded on a different day and sort of inserted in afterwards.
Yep.
Which, you know, great trick if you can pull it off. It is an incredible incredible editing trick. But I mean, we were there for quite a few hours beforehand, doing sort of the pre-interviews, doing a lot of sitting around and waiting for, you know, there are a lot of people to get through. And then eventually when you get to the backstage of the Hammersmith Apollo, like one of the best venues in London,
yep,
it's daunting for sure. And I think that the kid that you see on stage is a little more nervous than usual.
Yeah.
It is a very a very particular situation, and yeah, I would do it all again if I could. That the rush thinking about it is incredible, and the fact that people cared at all and that it resonated with people is a genuine blessing.
Yeah, I had a question too. Like, so I know like a lot of those shows, you have a limited amount of time as far as to kind of impress quickly. And I am not an opera expert, believe it or not, but I know a lot of the songs really, really kind of build and crescendo. Like, how do you plan for, okay, I got to kind of wow these judges kind of quickly. Like I can't lag forever. Or did you just kind of go and do what you did? Or did you pick a piece that was a little quicker to the, you know, to the big fireworks, if you will?
Yeah, so the prayer, actually, unless I'm remembering completely wrong, we shortened it. We for me, a lot of the modern classical stuff, or the popera, as one might say, often does have a particular moment where it hits its crescendo and then it either coasts out as big or fades off steadily. And so if you can kind of cut just before that max crescendo moment, you can get a very short build up and hit something right there. And that I think is something we considered, even if subconsciously, right? So really what ended up happening is we had a certain amount of time and we just chopped off a bit of the track,
right? And it worked
and showed up. Yeah, and it just so happened to work just about.
So let me ask you, I was thinking, you know, opera, it's never going to be like the mainstream form of music. So what is the challenge as far as grabbing, you know, younger audiences, newer audiences, exposing people to kind of get them in the door first and then have them fall in love? What is, like, as far as maybe the opera community or even just yourself, like a strategy that you got, do you look for songs that you can cover that people would know? Like, what is kind of the strategy with that, or the grand outlook as far as getting new opera fans?
Yeah, it's a tough thing to say, really. Mm-hmm. I think that to be exposed to opera at a young age, you have to be very particular type of person.
Right.
And I am not one of those people, actually. So I think that it is a lot of the times it's random chance, really, what music you get into. And just to have more out there, to have it available and to kind of be out there is more or less all I can do, really, right? I try nowadays. I have some interesting things bubbling away on the burners that are, I think, people won't quite expect from me. And maybe they'll be hooks for some of the younger people.
Nice.
But yeah, I my real approach is to try everything. There's no song that I won't sing because of a certain reason. I'll even hit up some hip hop.
I was going to say, so we could expect John a cover of Rough Riders Anthem by DMX. Yeah. Is what you're saying.
Yes. Yes, you can.
I'm in. I'm in. When that drops, I want you back on the show because I am in.
I will say in research, I caught your one of Country Home.
I was just going to say, Country
really,
Road.
Yeah. That was really good. And saying it because you're on. That was, I'm like, dang, I didn't think you could like opera that song, but okay. Nice.
Yeah, I heard a guy online kind of singing along to it in a sort of more classical style, and I had that same reaction and thought, okay, this is something.
Right.
Yeah, and I love that song. It means an awful lot to me. It was at the concert that ended up being turned into a PBS special. I sang it for the lady who kind of facilitated that whole thing, and unfortunately she passed away quite recently, so it will hold for the rest of my life this incredibly special place in my heart.
Out of curiosity, are you like fluent in Italian, or do you just kind of like know how to say the lyric? I'm always kind of curious about it because I'm kind of wondering, like, do you, when you pick a song, do you like try to look into the background, like the meaning of it, and or translate it, or can you just like go to Italy and just have a regular conversation?
He can only sing to other people. That's the problem.
Yeah. You know? Where is the bathroom? I need to know.
So my common thing that I say is that I'm still trying to wrap my head around English. When I get through that, I'll tackle some other stuff. It really is for me about building a very particular kind of dictionary, a lexicon of like how it differs from English is the easiest way, because there are bases of Italian in English, so there are certain things that transfer over, and then you kind of figure out what's different and you hope for the best.
Yeah. You know, you touched on something I hadn't really thought of before. You kind of mentioned when you said you were younger and you were singing with a much higher voice, you know, naturally as a kid. When you go through your puberty and your voice changes and you learn, is that like a giant adjustment for a performer? Like, is there a period where you're just kind of almost like in purgatory? Like, I'm not quite there with my deep voice, and I'm not quite, you know, I can't do the high stuff anymore. Is that like a whole learning process? Like, you almost got to sit out until you can learn how to really work your voice?
I think actually the most important thing is that you don't sit out. I think that for young male singers, this might actually be the point where a lot of them stop. I think it's a confusing age, you know, like not only is your brain going crazy, like, you know, it's puberty being a teenager, but then like this thing that you love doing, this hobby that you have, this thing that you think, oh, I might be able to do something with this with my life later.
Right.
It starts changing as well. Like that is, it's traumatic in a way.
Yeah.
I was super, super lucky to have a wonderful teacher, Jenny Ewington, who guided me through having my voice break, and I would still go every week, and I would have a completely different voice every week, it felt like. But eventually it kind of settled, and thankfully it did eventually. It really does feel at points as though it never will calm down, and you'll always be like fluctuating in a strange way. But just
it's interesting.
Stick it through, be tough. believe in yourself.
Oh, I like that. Okay. All right, Mike, no, it's not too late. It's not too late for you, Mike.
Never.
You heard me sing about the bathroom. There's a chance.
It is never too late.
I'll give you my information if you need to send my info out to some people.
Gladly.
If you need an understudy, you know, if you can't make it one night, Mike's got you.
Out of curiosity, when you're getting into a performance and all, do you have like a special routine or certain things you can't like drink or eat or something like that? Or do you kind of just like, all right, 5 minutes, I'm ready to belt out some stuff?
You didn't hear? He shoves waffles down his throat and then he runs to the microphone.
Of course. Standard operating procedure. I am generally very easygoing. I try and get as much rest as I can. I try not to sing too far ahead of an event. I try and keep it all close-ish so it's all still warmed up. I do like to eat something warm before I sing. And I try not to eat anything that is incredibly spicy. And I do like a bit of dairy. But that's about all. I'm very pretty easygoing, I think, when it comes to
that. Is the most mild warm up I've ever heard. You know, eat something warm, some dairy, and you know, rock out an opera concert.
Jonathan's yelling at a stagehand, not enough dairy, a little more,
more cheese. If I'm feeling not ready to go, I will hit the scales and start doing some of the weird noises.
Right.
But generally I try and save it for the stage. That like that energy of like being right there is often like pretty electric, I think. And so going out there and doing not quite my first singing of the day, but some of that raw energy is super cool for me.
Give us a peek into like the opera community. Is it like, are you guys tight-knit as far as other singers, or is it very competitive and kind of more of a solo existence, or do you guys really have like a camaraderie amongst opera singers?
It is a business in a way, right? There is competition, but I've particularly for like UK singers and those who are of quite well repute, like Russell Watson, we had I went to his super nice overlooking the river flat at one point, and we kind of talked it out and sang it out. So there is like a really, again, casual kind of nice brotherhood in a way. I was on Catherine Jenkins' tour a few years ago now. So there's no like bad blood kind of thing.
Yeah, I was gonna say I haven't seen like a behind the music of like opera beef, you know, like.
Oh man, I mean, if you did a behind the music of some of the like the 1600s, 1800s guys, that would be wild. but nowadays I think we're a little more relaxed about it all. But yeah, it is. We all want to get ahead. We all want to be going when we're going and doing what we're doing. And if we can help each other do that, that's awesome. If not, then that's awesome too.
Right.
I think.
I was watching your YouTube video about you coming over to the United States, and I need a little clarification on one of the stories you told. For what I understand, you were crossing the border from Canada to the United States, and because of your thyroid, they thought you had something nuclear in your car? Did I get that right?
Which is also the name of his new album, Nuclear Thyroid. Please tell us about
that's my crust punk album. So I have Graves' disease, which is a very scary sounding thing that just means an overactive thyroid.
Right.
It can suck really bad if it gets bad. As with most things. So I went in, you have to go into London to like a special hospital, and basically they give you a pill that's got a radioactive isotope in it, and it kind of kills your thyroid, destroys its function, it's never overactive again. I don't know whether to say upside or downside to this, is that you become slightly radioactive. so, you know, I had to have my bed pushed away from the wall so that I wasn't sleeping too close to anyone in the house. I couldn't be near pregnant women. Like,
wow.
It was a whole thing. I had a card that I had to take with me if I was traveling that said, you know, I'm radioactive until this date.
Oh, man.
So yeah, we were trying to, I think it was from Canada to America or the other way around. I can't even remember. But we were trying to get in, and they were not having any of it. We got the lady at the booth. I believe there must be some kind of sensor that's right there. She kind of instantly, like, warning signs going off in her head. Like, okay, why is there a nuke in this person's car?
Oh, my God.
And it's my manager driving us, and it's not even his car. It's his, I believe, a rental. So it's even more kind of like, whoa. So we get pulled over. We go into the, like, immigration building. And we spend a good little while there trying to hash things out. But I get out my special card they've given me, and things steadily get smoothed out from there. I believe they also scanned me, and I came back as the radioactive object. So it ended up being confirmed.
Unbelievable. Jesus.
What a weird thing. A weird thing to happen, but...
Yeah.
And then on top of it, he pushes bed near his neighbor that was banging on the wall earlier. It's like, come on. Oh,
I mean,
that might constitute a threat.
I mean,
I can't sleep and now my fish are dying. Hey, Jonathan.
I mean, Marvel is now bringing out all these new, like, characters that people have never heard of. The radioactive opera singer is not that far off. It's not that far off from a nice origin story.
I'm gonna come crying. It's too funny.
God. In seriousness, you recently released a version of Low C, written by Diane Warren. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, gladly. Diane is kind of an absolute legend, right?
Yep.
I scroll through her Wikipedia page, the credits, like, very often, and just kind of pick out super cool things. And in 2020, I was working on this album called Going the Distance, and it's sort of a pseudo autobiography and also just a concept kind of story. And we were looking for a last piece, a final song to fit it all together, really.
Right.
And so Greg Field, who is another absolute legend, who's producing the album, he just goes, why don't I call up my good friend Diane Warren? As one does. Cool, fine, right, sure, okay.
Right.
I got her on speed dial.
Yeah, yeah, well, don't we all? And so we get the song Compass from that for Going the Distance. And then, again, similar situation, she gives us These Are the Special Times for my Christmas album. And then sometime, I think March-ish, she DMs me on Instagram just out of the blue. And of course, I already know that she's got the movie is attached, the song is attached to the movie, The Life Ahead. So I already know all about it. I've seen it all. And she just messages and said, I've got this new song and I'd love if you put your voice on it, if you did a version of it. What am I going to say? No.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Like, just one of the greatest songwriters of the past 20, 30 years asking you to put your voice on one of her songs. No big deal, right? And so, you know, a few weeks later, I am in the studio on April 1st, funnily enough, putting down those vocal tracks and for the first time ever harmonizing with myself on a track, which it just sort of happened. I'd had the idea. I didn't write out any harmonies. I improvised them on the day, and I'm really happy with how it turned out.
It's awesome, man. It's awesome.
Well, thank you.
If somebody wanted to get into, like, the opera tenor field, what would be, like, your recommendations on the best, like, kind of first steps to get into the field?
Well, if you already have sort of a burgeoning interest in classical music, I would say look for those pieces that you find the most interesting. Look for pieces that fit your vocal range. It depends. It's so dependent on how deep into all of this you are. For the fledgling, for the new singers, just figuring out where your voice sits if you're an adult is very important. And then finding guidance is very key, I think, for going into this kind of singing. It's very hard to know what you're doing wrong if someone doesn't point it out to you.
Right.
And just, you know, being clear, you will do things wrong from day one. And I did things wrong. I still make technique mistakes. But yeah, just enjoy singing and don't stop. Have fun with it.
Yeah. John, I really, really have enjoyed our time here. It's a really pleasure to talk to you. You're a really awesome guy. If people want to check you out or delve into your music or see what you're up to, and what are you up to, what's coming up in your world, where can they go?
Well, thank you very much. Again, I really appreciate your time, and it's been super cool. Basically, anywhere that good music is sold, you can find me at John Antoine, JonAntoine, or just searching Jonathan Antoine. I'm across many different social platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Spotify, yes. Technically a social network. So yeah, Google me. I'm all over the place. My official website is jonathanantoinemusic.com. And, yeah, I'm always posting little things about my life. I posted a video of a fox in my garden just the other day, and people went crazy for it. So, yeah, if you like little tidbits, singing, and lots of other things, feel free to follow.
John, thank you so much for your time. We hope that you are getting back out there as things – we do see some light at the end of the tunnel as people are – getting vaccinated, and this world's opening back up again. So hopefully there is time for you to do your art in front of people very, very shortly.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Hopefully.
And final question, is Simon Cowell like Simon Cowell on TV, out of curiosity? Have you gone back to him and said, in your face yet?
He's actually a super sweet guy. That's the kind of the unfortunate thing in a way, right?
Right.
You kind of want him to be a certain way, but he's I think the reason he's gotten as far as he has is because he can make each individual person in a room feel like they're the most important person in that room while he's still standing in there. I think it's pretty impressive.
That's awesome. John, thank you so much, man. Stay safe out there, and maybe we'll see you when you come to the States again.
Hopefully. I'll be back soon, I promise.
All right, Mike. Jonathan Antoine.
Yeah, amazing guy. And I wanted to clarify something.
Right.
From our interview, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Violinists are the ones that play in the orchestra that are fully trained. When you're on a Zoom call, they're the violin people. That's a well-known, established technical term.
Can you imagine like going to like a beautiful theater and looking at the marquee and they're like, yeah, uh-huh. You know, tonight, whatever, we got an improv group. The next night we got Bob Dylan's coming around, and then, oh, the violin people, orchestra, like are coming down. I don't know, Mike. I think maybe it seems like you had the right diet and the right approach. He said something warm. You banged out some waffles before the interview.
I did.
He said maybe some dairy. I don't know if you washed those waffles down with a little bit of milk or something, but maybe if you did that, you could be on your way to maybe doing duets with Jonathan.
I think what I should do, if we ever bring back the Shenanigan Showdown, is I'm going to chug a gallon of milk and then do opera. Because once I get that dairy in my system, like, you know, whatever cranks out my body is going to be amazing.
I need to write this down because I'm just going to say we're doing the Shenanigans Showdown. So you do that. And then I'm just gonna be like, yeah, we're not doing that. The rest of that competition. I just need to see that moment in time of you doing opera after you chug dairy. Dairy was a surprise. I thought that was a surprising pick. I couldn't picture like having to sing after like milk or something like that. Feels like you get kind of like phlegmy kind of from like milk. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like my voice isn't, I was thinking like maybe herbal tea or something like that.
Yeah. Like, I can imagine he gets his coffee and then he like goes out and performs. Oh man, I was so off tonight. Wait a minute. This is non-dairy creamer. What the?
But yeah, what a sweet guy, man. Really, really interesting man. And seriously, go check him out. It's like the voice that comes out of that guy is ridiculous. Like, opera's clearly like not my thing or your thing, but it's like it's so respectful. Like when you see someone who's that good. I couldn't remember before. We had someone on this show who did opera, and I can't remember who it was.
Drawing a blank. Yeah. Sorry.
I don't know. Somewhere along the line, I know we've talked about opera before with somebody, but it might have been like a guest that was something but also did like opera on the side. I don't remember who it was exactly.
All right, for a $25 gift card from Verbal Shenanigans, any audience member that goes through our entire catalog and finds us our second opera singer will obtain this promotion.
Imagine it was like Al Snow or like Kirby Chambliss, the Red Bull Air Race pilot or something like that.
All right, so you didn't sleep for 7 days and then you became an opera singer? How's that turn?
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I think the Radioactive Marvel character has a good, you know, radioactive opera singer. That it might as well. If they're doing She-Hulk, why not the radioactive opera singer?
Okay, if you were the radioactive opera singer, would you prefer to be the hero or the villain?
Villain by far. Where you could be like, oh, I'd like send radioactive waves like through the city. Like, oh no, he's gonna hit the high note, and if he hits the high note, the city dies. You know.
No, how would you play that character? No, how flamboyant or like how like full of yourself?
I think you play the character like you're this opera singer with this gift. Almost like the Hulk when he gets mad, it comes out. Like you go almost gotta excite the opera singer or anger him for that voice to come out, and then he's just blowing nuclear radioactive waves all over. Like it's gotta happen by mistake where he gets pushed to kill some, like, you know, something bad happens at a show where he's like, oh, and like he melts the whole audience. Okay. And it just mentally taxes him. And he just can't get over it. And people are pushing him and calling him a killer and a murderer on the news and stuff like that. And it's just bothering him until eventually he snaps and he just becomes like, he's on the streets. Like these thugs come mess with him. He's just like, oh, it just incinerates people.
Hmm. I like the origin. I'm not sure if I'm full on for the you have to upset him to have the powers, because then that's harder for the villain to be the villain. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, that's true. So maybe eventually he does learn to kind of harness the power. You know?
Okay.
Like
okay.
He's almost snapped to a point where now it's just automatic.
Kind of like that line and all, I'm always angry from the Avengers, where you're kind of like, what?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Hold on.
I think they botched the Hulk, man. The Hulk was my favorite character. Like, I didn't hate it, but the nerdy Hulk guy or whatever, I don't know, Professor Hulk?
Professor Hulk.
Yeah. Listen, it would have all been forgiven for me if he just Hulked out at the end and just destroyed, like, was able to get into that epic Thanos Hulk match that I thought was going to happen in my head and just never did.
Yeah, I think they worried a little too little. Or too much, I would say, because, I mean, everything I've heard was they do it because Universal has rights to generic, angry Hulk. But if they do, like, offsets of him, like as they did, like, Planet Hulk and Professor Hulk, they don't have permissions for that, so they can keep using it. Without them being able to go, now I'm going to make a movie.
Maybe I'd buy it. I don't know. I feel like they got enough money to make anything happen that they want. And that whole battle scene, that epic battle scene in Endgame, like it just, that was the one, that was the chef's kiss, if you will. Mwah! That would have just made it the best if like Hulk was like, you know what? Screw it. And just like shed it and then just was like tearing apart aliens and him and Thanos were rolling around like. I had it in my head, and it just never gave it to me.
Yeah, I think in total we only got about probably the best one was that second Avengers one where he was like mind controlled and he just lost it.
The first one was like pretty amazing where he's like slamming Loki on the ground. That was
I mean that was a cool scene, but I think of the 2 hour some movie, I think we only got 8 minutes of him
right,
in that scenario.
And they did him so well. Like, that was the other thing. Like, it was like, oh my God, this is, I could watch this all day long. Like his rage. Have you checked out all the shows, the WandaVision, Winter Soldier and the first episode of Loki.
I'm caught up with Marvel TV shows. They're doing a good job. I think they're doing way better how they tried to start it originally with like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff like that. I think they finally realized, okay, now we can do kind of like the weird comic book things that we can't get away with trying to make a full movie about, and then give them you your little Easter eggs leading to, oh, that's going to be in Doctor Strange, and oh, that's going to be in Spider-Man. Yeah. Keep an eye out.
I got to say, we do love the waiting a week. It kind of makes it more of old school, like the Breaking Bad finale is coming on this week. What do you think? Like, it gives you that stirring up conversation thing again. Like, oh man, what's going to happen? What was that? What, you know? Like, I thought WandaVision was brilliant. First two episodes. I keep telling everyone who hasn't watched them, like, just got to get through episode two, and then three is where it starts. You know, at the first two, you're like, oh god, what? Something's got to be coming, and it's real slow. But the payoff is great.
Well, that's what I kind of liked about it. Like, they just give you this, and they're like, I'm not giving you all the answers. No. I want you to start sitting here going, wait, what's going on?
Right.
Which is great for me, like, watching it. It's not great when I watch it with my wife, because my wife is one of those, she needs the answer immediately.
Right.
So, like, she'll watch it. Why is this happening? Gotta keep watching. No, I don't understand. Why is this happening? I'm like, there's no way of explaining it.
Yeah.
Because they take some things from the comic books and they change things up. You just got to watch it and go. And then around the fifth time, I just make something up because she won't stop asking me.
Yeah. Yeah. WandaVision, I just thought was so ballsy and so creative. And I love that they just led off with that. Like, that was, you know, that was a big, big project to undertake. And it was like, it was done just really well. Falcon and Winter Soldier, I thought was good, not great. Like, Falcon, like, I'm having a hard time. Like, I don't care about him that much. Like, I'm kind of like, he's like average. Like, I thought it was really good. I just didn't think the villains were that good. Like, the flag smashers. I thought they were just kind of like, there was little payoff with them. I thought the other Captain America was pretty cool. But there's something about, was it Anthony Mackie? Is that his name?
Yes.
Something about him I just find very dry. I don't know. Just very, like, one-dimensional in some ways. But I thought the series was well done. And then I did watch Loki, and I thought the start was really cool. I think we're going to get a whole lot of things leading into, like, Doctor Strange, like, in this multiverse stuff. They're finally just like, okay, it's all here comes the multiverse, like, a million different timelines. I think it's going to get real confusing real soon.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they were planning to do. I mean, basically, they had all this stuff ready, then the pandemic happened, and they're like, well, we ain't going to release this until your butt's going to pay us in the theaters. We ain't going to just give it to you on Disney Plus for free. But I liked Falcon and Winter Soldier a lot. I think what I kind of liked about it is kind of what you're saying, that he's not a full-on character. And like they say, the whole series was based around identity and trying to figure things out, because he's dealing with, I'm not sure if I'm ready for the shield, but the second he doesn't, somebody just grabs it when, like, you know, Steve Rogers put all this thought into who would be the best person to take over the shield. You got Winter Soldier dealing with the whole, I'm a good guy now, but I have to get through everything I've done in this world and try to get penances and forgiveness and stuff like that. That's kind of things I liked about it. I mean, the villains in the end wasn't the greatest, but I don't think the series was meant to be built around it. Like,
I love the flag smash. I was like, we're not don't call us a terrorist group. And then, like, the next episode, they blow up a building of, like, innocent people. I'm like, that's literally what a terrorist group does.
But I also kind of like the term where they're like, you know, that confusion of what these flag smashers are, and then, you know, they're just trying to do what they're doing, and then they accidentally kill the guy, and then Captain America goes nuts and murders the kid. I mean that's the kind of stuff you see in the comics where you don't see in, like, the movies, where they'll just make a turn where you're like, oh dang,
yeah,
where you don't really see that much.
Like I said, anymore. To me, it was good, not great. Like, I thought WandaVision was spectacular. Loki, obviously, sure. we're one episode in, but it looks like it's going to be pretty cool. I love what they're doing. It's funny. I look at the titles coming up. I'm like, oh, boy. Like, I don't know anything about any, like, She-Hulk, like, just the name of that. I'm like, yikes. And then the Eternals, like, the previews didn't do much for me, but I could be surprised. But some of them, like, wow, we're really digging into like some B characters here now that I don't know anything about.
And it worked.
Yep.
Did you know anything about the Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, I knew everything. I knew everything, Mike. I was a Guardian Galaxy aficionado. You know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I mean, why don't you tell me a little about it?
Yeah, I don't know anything. I still don't think I've ever seen the second movie all the way through. I still think,
really?
Yeah.
But one side note, the other thing I liked about Falcon the Winter Soldier, there's a scene. It was literally recorded probably 20 minutes away from my house.
Oh, that's cool. Yep. So, yeah, I don't know. It's all good. I think the radioactive opera singer could fit right into the Marvel world, and I think. He would play a really big part. I think him and Thor could have some real chemistry together.
Well, I heard Batista's going to retire from Drax, so he could fit right into the Guardians. I heard
that
too.
God, isn't that like giving up the golden goose, man? Like, God, you could be in like 10 movies knowing what they have planned. You know, like at this point, Drax might have his own show for you know, who knows? They're just doing as much content as they want.
I mean, basically, for what I hear, he wants to stop it just because he says, you know, I'm mid 50s. I can't be shirtless all the time anymore. I can't make it work. I'm sure somebody can write something where Drax is just like, I'm business Drax. That's why I got a collared shirt on.
Not only that, they can make special effects that where we're seeing 500 characters fight each other. They can make him look buff for the eternity of his acting career. Like, you know, that guy's monstrous. Dudes have been. Michael Keaton was buff in Batman. He is not buff at all. You know,
maybe that's like the one thing CGI can't do. No, we haven't figured out nipples yet. I'm sorry. No, it's either your nipples or it's over.
The dude's painted in a suit anyway. Like, come on. All these people aren't ripped. They got amazing muscle suits on. Besides Thor, he's ginormous. But anyway, fun episode tonight. It's really cool guest tonight and all that. Berlo, anything to promote before we roll out of here?
I got nothing to promote, but I'll just say, as I found out from my cousin, my uncle is kind of on the last limb. It's my Uncle Bill. He's not as famous as my one-legged gay uncle, as I brought up on the show. He's not as famous as
Who could be, though?
Yeah, as my uncle who let off firecrackers in his hand because it was funny, Ten Finger Frank. But Billy was just a great man. We played Pinochle many a nights. Just an amazing human being, nicest guy on the planet. Helped out a lot with the Edison softball team, all the girls coming up. He had a long history with that, and he's still with us right now, but it's just kind of a matter of time. So I just like to say, Billy, we love you. Godspeed. Catch you up there one day, okay, buddy?
Yeah. Man, now, how do I follow that with comedy show dates? How am I?
Well, that's why you don't make me go first. But every episode, Burley, you got anything to brew?
That's how the flow goes. That's how the
brewery did brewery brewery.
I did drink bands once. yeah, sorry to hear that, man. But I will promote two comedy gigs. June 25th, I'll be featuring for the Reverend Bob Levy at Morris in Morris Plains at TIFFs. And then on the 27th, I'll be at Odd Logic Brewery. I'll be closing that show out in Bristol, Pennsylvania. So tickets are on sale for both of those. Come on out. Have a beer. Have some fun with us. I want to thank Jonathan for coming on. Really enjoyed our time with him. Go check out his new stuff and his work. And that's it, guys. If you could follow us on the socials, and please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify. It really helps populate the podcast. We'll be back next week with another great episode. Other than that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
Tune in next week when we talk to Jonathan Antoine's neighbor. He's got a lot of stories to say of how terrible it is living next to him.
Trees, younger than the mountains, blowing like a breeze, country roads, take me. Take me.